morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Today, Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollack, we're ready to roll for you. Telephone number 303-713-8255, 713-8255. You can call us on any legal question, any legal subject. You know we're injury attorneys, but we bring the show to you as a community service to answer your questions on any legal subject. It doesn't have to be an injury subject. 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. This is KHOW. We welcome our stations that simulcast our show, KRDO in Colorado Springs, KEZZ 94.1 FM Steamboat Springs, and the surrounding areas. We're ready to go. You know what? If you go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, we always say it's an information letter website, but you can get any of our books. They're free. Download them, an e-copy free, and you can have it. Or if you want a hard copy, you can just call the studio right now, or you can call our law firm, and we will send you copies of the books. Our very first book was Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, once in the accident, and again on the insurance claim. Don't get hurt twice. And you know, one of our recent books dealing with legal game plan, you must have a legal game plan. The insurance companies have a legal game plan against you. That's another book. It's one of our most recent publications. It has a listing of a lot of myths in there, but it also talks about insurance companies. It talks about statistics. It talks about how they make money. It talks about their programs. Have you ever heard of ACE, A-C-E? You need to know about it. That stands for Advanced Claims Excellence. What does that mean to you? That was a program initiated by a certain insurance company to not pay out on certain matters, and it was devised to minimize, by computers and other things, payouts on claims. Another one was called, just simply called internally in the insurance company, Bring Back a Billion. Bring Back a Billion Dollars. And it had to do with the claims department. Claims departments and insurance companies are supposed to be non-profit centers. They're supposed to be based on statistics and underwriting principles and risk analysis. And if there's a damage claim, they're supposed to pay. And then they institute these programs like Bring Back a Billion, and they have programs that affect the claims. You put in a claim, you're injured in a car crash, you put in a claim, you have no idea what is going to happen to you. So the point is, they have a legal game plan, and you should have your own legal game plan. You can get our book free and get a hard copy. Just ask us either right here or at a law firm, and you can get an e-copy if you go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Bob, let's talk a little bit about these insurance companies. They do try to defeat these cases. They do try to defeat your case. You know, and what do you see as some of the most prevalent attacks they make on people, maybe like how they say affirmative defenses or how they try to blame the driver?
Well, you know, Gary, I think one of the biggest things is the gaps in treatment. They'll try to use it, say you go to the doctor and you tell the doctor, how are you doing today? And you say, fine. Well, that gets in the medical record. And then maybe you don't treat for a couple of weeks or maybe a month or 2 months. And you go back and they say, no, back there you said you were fine. We're not going to provide you any more care. You know, you were fine back there, so you're fine now. Even though maybe you're going to physical therapy, maybe you've seen acupuncturist, seen a chiropractor. You know, the fact that you said you were fine back 2 months ago, they're going to cut you off and say, no more care. We're not going to pay for anything after that point. So that's, I think, one of the big things. You know, they want to use these gaps of treatment that you don't take, that you're not treating for your illness.
You know, when you turn over your medical records to them, and you have to eventually if you're going to file a claim, but you got to do it in the right way, which we've said many, many times, many years, that you don't just give them a blank release. You do not sign those releases. And if they want to record a statement, you think about that. You give yourself time. You don't give a recorded statement right after an accident. I don't mean within a few minutes. I mean within a few days. You don't give a recorded statement until you can assimilate the truth, what has happened on this situation, because they want to record you. But back to these gaps and these medical records. When you turn over your records, they attack the records. You know, it's interesting, Bob, because we see it in our law firm every day. People go to the doctor. They might go to the doctor 5 times. They might go 40 times. They might go to therapy, acupuncture, conservative modalities of treatment, and they don't see their own medical records. they don't see what's put in those medical records by anybody. And I mean, I don't. When I go to the doctor, I don't see my medical records. I don't order them. I don't look at them right then. I don't see. And a lot of our clients say, well, that's incredible. That's not true. This is not true. So when the insurance company gets your medical records and you're going to file a claim, what happens, what is true, is they try to cherry pick the entries in your medical records. And so if one day you say, well, a pain scale out of 1 out of 10, 10 being the worst, if it's a 2 today, then what do they do with that, Bob?
Well, they're going to, like you said, they're going to cherry pick the record. And like I said, you know, what you need to, when you go and talk to a doctor, you need to be very specific about talking about your injury, your pain. And I always talk to clients to tell them, you know, sort of, I have like 5 points that I want them to talk to about the doctor. And that would be, you know, the where the pain is, the frequency, the kind of pain, the duration of the pain. So you don't go in the doctor and say, hey, doc, my back hurts. That's not enough to get you. You know, you really need to work with the doctor, make sure the medical records have enough in there to protect you, so that when the insurance company does look at the medical records, it doesn't say fine. It says I have a backache, and the doctor can specifically, you tell him where it hurts. Don't just go in there and say I have a backache. It's too general, and it's not going to help you support your case when the insurance companies get the medical records.
And details are important. So you do start with the fact if you have a low back pain, my low back is killing me, whatever you're going to say. And we always counsel our clients to tell the truth. But tell all of it. Don't leave any of it out. Because if you leave something out, the insurance company then says, well, you didn't mention anything about your shoulder. You were just talking about your low back. Well, yeah, but I was just seeing this doctor for my low back. But you didn't mention anything about your shoulder. You didn't mention it this visit, that visit, the next visit, the next visit. So you must be complete. You must be thorough, and you must be detailed. And, you know, Bob has a good approach there on the 5 points. You know, yeah, I got to tell you, Doc, I was in an accident. My low back hurts. It hurts, and then you describe it. But what is it, aching, stabbing pain, pins and needles? Do you have radiculopathy? That's how doctor talk, radiating pain down your arms from your neck or down your legs from your lumbar spine. Do you have these symptoms? Do they come and go? You tell the truth. Never be afraid of the truth. The problem is most people don't tell the whole story. And sometimes doctors, they're there to treat you for your low back, and they don't get into the other areas. You know, by one of my favorite or unfavorite, that's not even a word, but it just drives me crazy, is let's say you have a jaw problem, a TMJ problem from an accident, and you're treating with your dentist or orthodontist, and you also have a low back problem. And they said, when you go to the dentist, your dental records don't mention anything about your low back. Well, of course they don't mention anything about your low back. And that's kind of an extreme example, but I've seen it. But they also do it with other orthopedic records and that sort of thing. So they cherry pick them.
And also, Gary, I think what they try to do is, you know, they take the first record when you know, after an accident, it may take a couple, 3 days. Your adrenaline kicks in. You don't really feel the pain, or you don't realize that you might have been hurt in the accident. The insurance company is going to jump all over that and say, well, you know, here's the ambulance report. You told the ambulance driver that you were fine, that you didn't need any care. And then, you know, 2 days later, your back starts hurting, and the insurance company is going to pick up on that. And also, Gary, those insurance companies will try to get in touch with you as soon as the accident occurs, within several days. And they're not really allowed to. There's a statute in Colorado that says that an insurance company should not be contacting someone who's injured within the first 2 weeks if they're under the care of a doctor. And that happens. I mean, we've had clients where people show up on the doorstep 2 days after the accident trying to get the case settled.
Right. And you got to pay attention to that. There's a statute on that, but most people don't know it. And most of the companies don't even comply. Or sometimes they don't comply, sometimes they do. You need to understand your rights. You need a legal game plan. We wrote a book. Brad Pollack and I wrote a book, and we put our over 30 years of experience each into this book. If you don't understand right now that you need a legal game plan, you need to understand what to do, how to do it, what not to do, how the system works, then it's just like guessing. Bell and Pollack, our telephone number 303-713-8255. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to all of our listeners. We appreciate all of your calls, 303-713-8255. Gary Bell and Bob Leonard of the law firm Bell and Pollock, we're here for you, standing by to answer your questions on any legal subject. If you want any of our books, you just have to go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, download them a copy free, or give us a call and we will mail you a hard copy free. There's a new case out by the Colorado Supreme Court. If you've been injured in a truck accident, especially a commercial truck accident involving a commercial truck, the flavor has changed. The legal flavor of those accidents and the injuries and what you can claim has changed. More than ever, you need to understand what that new case means. It's called In re Ferrer, and the Colorado Supreme Court changed the landscape with regard to commercial truck accidents. If you've been involved in one, you need to know what that's about. Joining us live right now on KHOW is Carol about a statute of limitations question. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, my son, who is almost 49, had an outburst at a family gathering the other day. He claims when he was 6 or 7, a babysitter physically abused him. And I'm sure that the statute of limitations has expired. I'm wondering, though, if we could find her at all. We've lost contact. She's moved out of the neighborhood. If it would be appropriate to write her a letter, or would we get in more trouble than that would be worth? Oh, I just don't know.
All right, no problem. So let's just talk a little bit about what somebody wants to say in this letter. Give me an idea.
Oh, I would have no idea other than to let her know that I found out about the abuse. I mean, I wouldn't want to be threatening, but I think she should know what Jerry has said about her and what he's told me.
Okay, so this is like physical abuse or sexual abuse?
It was physical.
Physical abuse by the person that was in charge of him at the
right.
time. Okay, so we're going to get to the statute of limitations in just a minute, but I'm going to answer your question, your inquiry, in two parts. Number one, yes, you can write a letter. You have to be careful how you write the letter. And so when I write letters like this or counsel clients to write letters like this, I usually approach it this way. You write the letter, and instead of saying in accusation language or verbs, you did this, you that, you this, you say, we have been told the following, okay?
Okay.
And then you ask them questions.
Okay.
We've been told the following. Is that true? Would you please give us your side of this? What happened? And, you know, in the letter writing entities and letter writing business, that's about as good as you're gonna get. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So because when you do that, you could be subject to other laws like libel and slander, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be careful there. If you ever file a pleading in court, there's sort of a quasi immunity because you got to say what you're going to say in court. You got to say they're X, Y, Z. They're a scumbag. They engaged in sexual abuse. They engaged in physical abuse. And if you don't say it, you don't get it in court. Mm-hmm. So there's a privilege to be able to say that. But we're talking about physical abuse, and how long ago do you think it happened?
It would have been in 1974.
1974?
Yeah, 74, 75.
Okay.
You know, Gary, the statute of limitations for those kinds of things are, it's tolls. So it's 6 years from the age of 18, so be age 24.
Okay.
But there may be in a situation where if you have a repressed memory, a suppressed memory, as a disability can trigger another statute of limitations of up to 6 years.
Okay. I think my son has dealt with it all these years, but just never told me the extent of this. When he was little, he would tell me he had headaches.
Right.
The babysitter's son would tell lies about him. He'd get in trouble. Things of that nature. But
sounds like a real wonderful person here we're dealing with. Incredible. So
and now he's saying she beat his bottom until it was bloody.
Oh my gosh!
Couldn't walk, and
you know,
told me, and I was newly divorced, just got a job, and had 3 kids, and I told him, you have to go to the babysitter because I have to work, and you know, you're just going to have to get along. And so that's why he never told me anymore.
And then suddenly we had an outburst at the family gathering, and then it all came out, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm very, very sorry this happened. I'm very sorry. This is horrible. So he could have some legal remedies here. The statute of limitations is not necessarily expired. And I know you told me at the top of the inquiry, but what is his age now?
He is 48.
48. Okay, well, then that's going to change the flavor of that situation because, you know, there is a tolling of the statute of the limitations for minors. And then there's a discovery statute of limitations. So you've asked us a question that you... There's probably not enough time left. There's probably not enough time, but we're going to have to drill down further and get you a further answer.
Mm-hmm. Was this in Colorado?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll be glad to help you. We'll be glad to give you a final answer. But I understand your point is you want to write a letter. You want to be very pointed, mm-hmm. And so the letter then might contain some more details.
Okay.
We've been told, and don't just go write this letter without talking to an attorney, and I'll be glad to help you off the air.
Okay.
But you're going to ask some questions. You know, this is reported to XYZ. Is X true? Is Y true? Is Z true?
Right.
Okay. And
well, I'm thinking the best thing would be if he's willing, he and I make an appointment with you and discuss it.
That would be absolutely fine. We would be glad to help both of you, okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold. If you give Kevin your information, we'll have your phone number. We'll get in contact with you, and we'll see if we can help both of you.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Carol, thank you for the call.
Have a good day.
Have a good day for you.
Bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. We're here for you. Don't forget about the show that follows our show, the Barry and Larry Show, the Consumer Real Estate Show. They are experts, and I get a lot of questions about inspections. It seems like that's a big hang-up point with regard to contracts. If you have a good broker and if you have a good lawyer and they understand contracts, and I know Barry and Larry do, the inspection and the notice of correction, what you're going to have to correct if you're going to sell your property, is critical. And you don't want to do it the wrong way. And they can help you. Right now joining us is John from Westminster. Good morning, John. What can we do for you?
Hello. Thank you for doing what you do here on the show.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. What's your question?
My mom has been in a nursing home for around 5 years, and I have her power of attorney. She was qualified as a Medicaid recipient in Jeffco, and recipients need to requalify as Medicaid recipients every 4 years or so. She fell out of that qualification while being a patient in this nursing home. It's full care. Anyway, I was notified by the nursing home in a non-timely manner that I needed to requalify her. Now, I have made repeated attempts to requalify her. Many phone calls have been made out there at the Taj Mahal, and I personally delivered the requested documentation that she has, proof of income and so forth, from her husband was a retired federal employee plus Social Security.
Right.
Now, I've continued to pay the normal amount of money that we would pay to the nursing home as her share, and then what has happened is the federal government and this Jeffco have dropped the ball in requalifying her. So meanwhile, the nursing home, it keeps sending me accumulated bills. At this point, I owe them about $125,000 worth of unpaid federal portion of that money. And I'm wondering, you know, am I personally liable for that money? And how can I get the state and federal government to pay their portion for her care as a Medicaid recipient?
Okay, so how long has this been going on?
I would say we're in arrears for about probably 12 months, you know.
Right.
So that's about a year. That's about what it takes, about $120,000 a year to take two women to stay in one little room that's 15 by 18 feet. They charge about about $120,000 per person per year to stay in that tiny little room.
Incredible. And the application that she submitted and the documents submitted prove that she is qualified.
Yeah. I've met all the necessary documentation, you know, of her, that she is receiving a pension from federal government as a retired surviving spouse of a retired federal employee. I have submitted that documentation and also her Social Security and the tax documents necessary representing those things. And then I have also submitted the other request, you know, that she's non-ambulatory and that, you know, they're taking care of her. They haven't kicked her out, but they just keep sending me these bills.
Right. And then, John, a couple of questions, and then we'll see if we can get to an answer for you. But did you sign any contract or any papers with the nursing home, you individually?
I think when they initially submitted her, when she went over, she was originally in Adams County at a nursing home, and then they had an opening at this nursing home. And I asked her if she wanted to go, and she said yes. And, of course, they transferred her over. And I imagine, yes, I probably did sign an initial document that says I am personally financially liable.
Okay, well, that might be the answer to the question, and I'm sorry about that. But we've got to get to the bottom of it. So, and we've got a break coming up. Can you hang with us
to
the other side of the break? Now, listen,
sure.
what you need to do, and I'll tell you also after the break, is what you need to do is get the copy of the paperwork that you signed. Because your question is, am I liable for this amount of money, right? And that's question one. And then question two is, what can you do to get the government to move forward on the Medicaid, especially retroactively, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on hold. Just stick with us till the other side of the break, all right?
Very good. I sure will.
Okay, thank you. The Bell & Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell and Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell & Pollock. We're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives. And our radio lives right here will answer your question and solve your problem on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. It's the time to call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We've been doing this show for years. We've helped thousands of people answer their legal questions, and we're glad to do it. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Join us live right now from Caitlin's. Is Eric. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you doing today, guys?
Good. What's cooking?
I've got a couple of specials to run by you for the week. We're going to start off with that breakfast special. We're going to showcase our breakfast sandwich. That's going to consist of two eggs cooked any style you like. You get your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage with that. You can get American cheddar, Swiss, or pepper jack cheese. We're going to load that down with some fresh hatch chopped green chili, a little bit of lettuce, a little bit of tomato. I suggest a side of our golden hash browns on the side to go with that. It's a good pair. And then our lunch special is going to be our Mexican spinach salad. Now, that's going to be a bed of baby spinach. We're going to put sliced tomatoes, fresh avocado, baby sweet corn, black beans, a little fresh cilantro on top of that. That's going to be our lunch special all week. Come and check that out. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito bar. It's all-you-can-eat. It's only $8.45. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. That's something to come and check out. We're also showcasing some honey wheat gluten-free bread. We haven't done a lot of gluten-free, but we're going to throw that in there this week and see how that goes. So you can come try that out, give us some feedback on that. We've got the umbrellas up. We've got carafes of mimosas for $12.50. It's going to be nice and sunny. It's a great place to come and eat, get a refreshing drink. Come on down to Caitlin's. If you haven't tried this, please come and see us. We'd love to check you.
All right. You don't know this, but you just brought a big smile to Bob Leonard's face here in the studio because I probably shouldn't say that.
I didn't know he was there.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but he doesn't eat gluten. So you just really put a smile on his face.
About time.
Yeah, about time, Eric.
That's right. That's right, guys.
Where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys. Come on down and check us out.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, you guys.
All right, Caitlin's Restaurant. You love it every bite of the way. The Bell & Pollock Legal Show, we're here for you. Right before the break, we were talking to John in Westminster about a nursing home problem. He did sign some papers. His mother's been in a nursing home, and it's about $7,000, $7,500 a month. He's processed a Medicaid application. They won't act on it, and it's been a long time, and now he keeps getting bills. And I think it's up to $100,000, $120,000, you said, John?
Yeah, that's right. And they seem to have acted upon it. I wrote, you know, repeated correspondence dated down there at the Taj Mahal, talking to the appropriate person who's in charge of getting her requalified. They said that she had done it, and she's about 100. She's not going to last that much longer. But She's in there, and they say that she's requalified, but I've never actually gotten a reduction in the bill over there from the nursing home itself. They just keep sending a higher and higher bill, and you know, and I just keep sending in the same amount of money per month that we've always done, which is usually about everything that she receives except for $50.
Right. Well, this does worry me about the papers you signed. So we've got to get down to the bottom of that. You need to get the papers. We're gonna help you on this matter. We got great ideas. We were talking during the break about you and your issue. So first of all, you're going to get those contracts and the papers, whatever you signed individually. Okay. Then secondly,
I have all the documentation.
All right. All right. Great. Well, we'll be even glad to meet with you. All right. So, but now we're going to talk pure law. Can you force the government to do an act that you want them to do? Any act. So let's talk about it. It's a fascinating area of the law. So under the law, it differentiates, and it's called a ministerial act. Those are key operative legal words, a ministerial act. Can you sue a government agency to make them perform a purely ministerial act? You cannot make them to perform discretionary acts like, I want you to audit my tax returns and tell me what the amount is and tell me and finish your audit. So that's sort of a discretionary act. But let me give you some examples of some pure ministerial acts. I think you're going to be surprised. You can sue them that they won't sign a notary public. They won't sign the paperwork. You can sue them for issuance of a building permit. And it would be called a writ of mandamus by the district court judge to make them do a ministerial act. You know, another one kind of fascinating, there was a case where they sued to make them issue a demolition permit. Okay, you getting the flavor of this?
Amazing.
A building permit, a demolition permit. And so it's a close question, but I think you can do it. And also, when you sue the government on here, everybody says, well, you got governmental immunity. Gary and Brad and Bob Leonard have been talking about governmental immunity for years, so I thought they were immune. Well, they're not immune from lawsuits for a writ of mandamus, an order to force them to perform a ministerial act. I'm right on the fence with you because I think this might be a ministerial act. If they've had all the information and there's no discretion left and she qualifies, so that's one question. I think Bob got his input as well.
You know, does she requalify every 5 years?
Yeah, I think you have to requalify every 4 or 5 years as a Medicaid recipient. She shifted from Adams County to Jefferson County, and some of that paperwork got a little bit confusing in there, but we did requalify her, and she was rolling along just fine. And then, you know, about a year ago, they kind of notified me in slow motion that, hey, she needs to requalify. And then as time went forward and the money built up, they started to get more aggressive on notifying me that, hey, we really need to get her requalified. So I put forth the effort to do so.
So, Gary, should he come in the office and we'll take care of him?
Right. So, John, if we're going to put you on hold. We're going to give your information. So here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to meet with you. I'll be glad to look at the papers with you also. And when you come in, we've got at least two attorneys we could refer you to on this type of issue. But first, we're going to try to help you free ourselves. And so we'll be glad to do that. I think this bears more than just a phone conversation. And if you're willing to do it, fine. So I'm going to put you on hold. If you give Kevin your information, we would appreciate it.
Well, that's very good. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call,
Thank
sir.
You.
All right.
Uh-huh.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell and Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. We are here. It's Saturday morning. We're ready to legal rock and roll. Join us live now is Bob from Denver. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm well. Listen, I'm calling. My daughter had gotten a recent divorce. She got some child support. He had a job in the federal government, got fired, so he's the only employee ever to get fired from the federal government. But anyway, she also was entitled to the pension when he... when he's qualified or when the pension is due or all that.
Right.
She gets 50% or 40% or whatever it is.
Okay.
But our attorney, and nobody seems to can answer the question of how are we going to know when he gets that pension?
Okay. So I don't know what the court decree says, but let's talk about that legally just a second.
Okay.
And it's usually called a quadro. That's the legal lingo. That's the acronym, quadro. And that stands for Qualified Domestic Relations Order, a bunch of fancy legal words. But quadro deals with these things. And so the court decree It would depend on how it's written, but inherent, whether it said your daughter's entitled to an accounting and to be told, that would be enforceable as a court order. But if it's not there explicitly that she's to be told, inherent and implied in that obligation to share, that would be the obligation, as I see it, to tell your daughter when, if, how the quadro and the retirement goes into effect. Also, subpoenas can be issued out of that divorce case 10 years later, 15 years later, 5 years later, doesn't matter. Subpoenas can be issued to compel and to get the retirement people to respond.
Yeah, because they won't, obviously, and I understand they won't give us any information because we're not the participant in the pension.
Right, but these divorce files, unlike a civil case file, the divorce files stay open. I mean, they're there, they're pending, because there's always post-decree questions, and this is one of them. But the provisions in the divorce decree, we're going to start there on the quadro provisions, and probably a letter. You know, and think of it this way, Bob. If I'm the judge, you're the judge, and you're hearing this case, and you're not involved with your daughter. So you're hearing this case, Judge, we wrote one letter, we wrote two letters, we wrote three letters, four letters, whatever. And then we called them, and they won't tell us. The people won't tell us. The former husband won't tell us, and the agency that monitors this won't tell us. And that's not going to make me happy if I'm the judge.
Sure. Is there an age where you have to take your pension out, or you can't take it before a certain age?
Okay, so then that's going to depend on the vesting provisions and the provisions of the retirement plan, okay?
Right. He's vested.
He's vested, and how old is he?
I'm thinking 43, 45.
Well, do you suspect he's drawing on it?
Oh, no, I just when I die, she's going to be forget about it, and I don't want her to forget about it because that's money in the bank.
Okay, so... you know, in the old-fashioned term where I grew up, this is going to require some legal elbow grease, period, paragraph. It's going to require some pushing, legal aggressive legal action and questions to get it. So, I mean, that's the way you do it. That's the way she should do it. And, if it's not an issue right now, then we're not going to jump in to, you know, help her write a letter or whatever. But she should be told this is a right she has. And if she's told in response back, well, no, it's not in the court order. You can't get that. Yes, she can.
Yeah, no, it's in the court order.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that, but it's a case of, if we say, hey, did you get your pension yet, or have you drawn on it? I'm sure I would say no,
Well, exactly, but there's ways to do it. I mean, you can get subpoenas, letters, you can get court orders, you can haul them into court. So, I mean, the answer for you is there's remedies, and the answer for your daughter is there's remedies, all right?
Yeah, okay, I appreciate your time.
Thank you for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Go to our website. championsofthepeople.com. It's an information loaded website, and don't forget about our two new books, one on motorcycle accidents and motorcycle law in Colorado, the definitive guideline on that subject, and our new book, Legal Game Plan. You wouldn't bake a recipe without instructions. You wouldn't put together a product without instructions. You wouldn't just guess on how to fix your car, so why do you do it when you're injured? Bell and Pollock will be right back. Welcome back, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. What are you going to do when the rain sets in? The Elton John song. What are you going to do when the legal rain sets in on your injury claim? Do you have a game plan, or are you just guessing? You just hoping. Guessing and hoping won't work. Get a free copy of our book, Legal Game Plan. Join us live right now is Robert from Fort Collins. Good morning, Robert. What can we do for you?
Yeah, good morning. I just had a question about what constitutes abandoned property and in the state. We had a contractor. I was moving into a farm that we bought, and I had a bunch of shipping containers.
Right.
Eight shipping containers full of tools and all kinds of stuff. And we had a contractor come over and do some fencing and some landscaping and that sort of thing. And one day I came back, and he was over there unannounced, uninvited. Parked, he says, well, I just came over to do some work. Well, he left. He did a little work and left. And then I realized that I had there was a lot of things missing, and over the next month or two, he just disappeared totally. No, didn't answer his phone, no way to contact him, and he left his concrete mixer there. And then, so we, over several months, there was like probably $4,000 or $5,000 worth of stuff missing. He had made several trips in and out of there with his truck. And anyway, so I called the sheriff's department to see if that concrete mixer was stolen. We ran the serial numbers and all that. He couldn't find anything stolen. So I asked him, well, what do I do with it? He says, well, it's yours. Do anything you want to with it. And so 9 months later, this guy shows up out of the blue and wants his concrete mixer back.
Okay. So, and so when you say $4,000 to $5,000 of stuff missing, did he steal things?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's $4,000, $5,000. Just a lot of tools. All the stuff I was.
So this was stuff in your container that he stole?
Yeah, there were several containers. There was like six containers, seven containers that had my stuff in it. And we were just trying to get a building put up out there, and just hadn't succeeded in that yet. So I haven't actually moved out of the containers. And so we were working out of the containers, and he knew where my stuff was. Like I said, he stole a lot of stuff. He was the only person on that property.
Okay, now, Robert, when you did you ever tell the police, the sheriff's department, anybody that he stole anything? Did you ever file a complaint, a claim, anything?
Well, I didn't file a complaint. I did talk to the sheriff's department.
Right.
Mainly because I didn't know what all was missing, because everything was crammed in these containers. And I didn't, and so as the several months went by, because I brought everything in there from to do certain jobs. I have a big ranch up in Wyoming. And,
right.
Well, I was just bringing stuff in that we needed to get that new property situated.
Okay, so let's go through the components. That's how I analyze legal issues. So, yeah, he was there. He had permission to be on the property during that period of time. Okay, so how are we going to prove this? He had access to the tools, et cetera, this quote stuff. He had access to it. It was then missing. Okay, there's a couple of missing links in this analysis. What is the proof he took them, and exactly what did he take? Because I mean, if you're sitting on the stand and you were testifying, he took this stuff, and so it would be what stuff, Robert? And what specifically was it? And how much was it worth? And exactly what tools? And why didn't you report it for several months, et cetera, et cetera? That's why those internal elements are very critical. Now, let's get to this abandoned property question for you, okay?
Yeah.
He leaves the concrete mixer there. Abandonment is a two-part process. There's a statute Bob Leonard's going to cover with you in a minute. But abandonment under the common law is a two-step process. Number one, they left the physical property and they left, and it's there. That's number one. Number two, did they intend to abandon it, which becomes a factual determination. And so if they left for a week and came back to get it, probably not. If they left it for months, leaning more towards they just left it and abandoned it. And that was their intent. Now he's back on the scene, saying, where's my concrete mixer, as you said, all right? So what I'd really like to tell you to do, Robert, is tell him, there's the edge of my property line. Go out there and don't ever cross it again. Have a nice day. You took my stuff, all right? We got to talk about legal things. We can't take that approach. Legal things is the statute says you got to give him. You got to give him notice. So you got the common law blended with the statute. So Bob, let's cover the statute for Robert right now, and then I got some more advice for you, Robert.
You know, Colorado has before you sell the property, you can't take his mixer without giving some kind of notice for which you're going to sell it. There's a statute in Colorado, 3820.16116, abandonment property, talks about the sale, notice of sale. It's, property is presumed to be abandoned if he's failed to contact you for a period not less than 30 days and in good faith. So, first of all, there has to be some time period where he hasn't contacted you. So how long was it that he hadn't?
Months, right, Robert?
9 months.
9 months. You know, I like you've got the upper hand in this whole situation. I mean, you still got the concrete mixer, but you got really good proof and a presumption that he abandoned it. And so I wouldn't just automatically give it back to him. He's going to have to earn it. And to earn it, he's got to take some legal action against you. And when he does, and if he does, then you would make a counterclaim against him for all the stuff he took. It becomes problematic for your proof of what he took, but the legal analysis and the status of the two parties is does he really want to get into this fight? Many times as lawyers, we look at that situation or any situation and say, okay, Mr. or Mrs. Client, if you want to go forward on this, we'll be glad to do it, but here's how we see it. If you go forward on this, a legal claim is going to be coming back at you. And so if he comes at you, he's got to understand a legal claim is going to be coming back at him, all right? And so it's like the law of physics, and I never was good in physics, but, you know, for every action, there's an equal and proper reaction, and that's what it is, all right? You physicists, I probably messed that law of physics up. You'll tell me, but the bottom line is, you've got to take a firm stance on this. You can. He abandoned it for not more than 30 days, but he abandoned it for 9 months. And no, you didn't give him notice. I'm pretty sure, probably right in writing, registered, certified mail, no notice like that, right?
Well, there was no way to contact him. He didn't answer his phone, and I didn't know where he lived, and you know, there was absolutely no way. Even the cops tried to, the sheriff's department tried to contact him. He didn't answer his phone, didn't return phone calls, and he shut his phone off.
You know, to do it right, you're supposed to give him 15-day notice before selling the item by sending out a letter, some notice to last known address. And if you didn't have that, I mean.
Well, you didn't comply with the statute technically, but you didn't sell the item, right? You still have the concrete mixer, right?
Right.
Okay, so you know, you've got to dig your heels in legally. And if he comes on your property, I tell him, have a nice day. There's my property line. Goodbye. And I think we need a little bit more conversation with you off the air on the phone. So, and we're up against the wall in time. If you don't mind giving Kevin your information, we'll finish this off the air.
Okay. I need a statute, too, if you would.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, it's 38-20-116. 38-20-116.
And it's called abandoned property notice of sale.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Robert. We got to go.
Thank you.
All right, Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Information is there for you. Don't guess. Know your rights. Get our books free because we are the champions of the people.
Stay cool. Be hot this weekend.